This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning. Not many people know that Mara traces its roots back to colonial times in 1951 and not the result of any post-1969 Bumiputra policy. In its present form, Mara was officially established in 1966. Mara now comes under the Ministry of Rural Development. Today, we're speaking to an even newer incarnation of Mara, Mara Corporation Seremban Berhad, established through a restructuring to take over Mara's assets in 2016. And Akram Shah Sanusi, its chairman, joins us. Good morning, Akram.
Morning.
So let's go through this restructuring of transferring the assets from Mara to Mara Corp, which you chair. What's the purpose of this?
Well, in 2016, I think on the back of a lot of the governance issues that came up following the subprime crisis, Sarbanes-Oxley, etc., a lot of that actually came also to Malaysia because as a global trading nation, MOF had to be very sensitive and familiar of the needs to cater to the needs of stronger governance in the country. So even though it was under the previous Barisan National Government, because of this strong international impetus, a lot of the agencies under government at that time was exposed to commercial risk through direct ownership of Seremban Berhad or companies, even Berhad companies actually. That included Mara. And Mara actually had an interesting legacy because in the 80s and 90s, there was such a thing called Mara Holdings. Mm-hmm. And Mara Holdings at its zenith under the leadership of, if I recall, Dato' Rizwan Halim was the person who really pushed it up. And at one point, it actually had cash holdings of around half a billion ringgit.
And what's your asset size today?
Our asset size at the moment under Mara Corp is actually quite modest. We have around 400 million, just a bit above 400 million ringgit worth of assets. Mm-hmm. Some of the companies actually then have further assets under management.
That's quite telling because when you point out that in the 80s and 90s, it was half a billion at a time and it's declined to 400 something.
Well, let me correct that. Yeah. You see, Mara Holdings was so successful that in the 90s, they actually decided to privatize. Or spin it out. So that then became various other companies in the private sector. So Mara then decided to build new companies as investments. And those then were actually directly owned and controlled by Mara without a holding company in between.
So it seems like the implication here of corporatizing, so to speak, of the Mara asset is to put Mara under a bigger business scrutiny, making Mara more competitive?
The reasoning actually is this. Mara actually has two significant pillars, which is development of human capital and development of entrepreneurship. Now, investments have always been the third pillar because of, as we mentioned, legacy. However, it has also always been seen as strategic in terms of to develop both the other pillars, meaning specifically entrepreneurship and human capital development. So a good example would actually be, for instance, our ventures into aerospace. So we have a tier one MRO company in Asia Aerotechnic. Mm-hmm. And Asia Aerotechnic actually is there in the view that it would be able to support our aerospace college, which is the Mara Institute of Aerospace Technology under UniKL. And MIAT actually regularly produces 1,000 to 2,000 aerospace professionals every year. And they're so good that actually a lot of them actually are employed overseas rather than Malaysia because the industry still can't absorb the volume of students that MIAT actually produce.
So I'm wondering whether you'd be able to do the job well in terms in the context of what is your mission? Is it to make profits or are there other unstated mission behind this?
In the first place, the original move in 2016 for all the agencies to create all these holding companies, if you recall, I said it was related to the need for good governance. And all that is related also to the fact that a government shouldn't hold direct commercial risk. On the basis of that philosophy, commercial risk then is shifted to these holding companies, including Mara Corporation. We didn't call it Mara Holdings because it was a bit traumatic to a lot of people in Mara to rename it the same name as before. Mm-hmm. So Mara Corporation was created as this holding company to shield Mara from commercial risk. And what was interesting in terms of history was this. Mara Corp was formed in 2016, but the assets were never transferred across during the time of the Barisan National Government. The first phase actually only came into action towards the end of December in 2018, just prior to my being appointed as chairman. And I believe that, that this is another another scenario where the dichotomy of the intention versus the action of the previous government, we are now actually under Pakatan Harapan realizing some of the good intentions that went awry during the previous government. Mm-hmm. So end of 2018, we actually moved the first phase, the first eight companies. And our hope, our great hope is that with the success that we've had in turning around these eight companies, I mean, it was for 2018, we closed with a group loss of 74 million. This year, we are expecting to post, the estimate at the moment stands at 20 million ringgit profit before tax across the group.
I mean, so while you say that the execution of transfer is with good intentions, and yet you are seen as a political appointee because you're, you know, you come from a long heritage of politics. Your late father was ex-Kedah Menteri Besar Tan Sri Sanusi Junid. You're also a Bersatu Supreme Council member. In fact, you contested in GE14 in a three-cornered fight, and you gave the other two parties a good run for the money, even though you lost. So can you be said to be a political appointee of the Bersatu in Mara itself, which is going against what the Pakatan Harapan government is promising?
Actually, this is quite ironic. I actually view all appointees by Pakatan Harapan government, regardless of backgrounds, to be political appointees. Because it's not to do with your background, whether you're a politician or not. In the end, you're appointed by the politicians. So you're political.
But you can actually be a professional appointee. And I mean, you shouldn't only be neutral, but you must be seen to be neutral.
I know, right? But this is the thing that's curious. You see, a lot of people actually refer to us as political appointees, but what they remember is recent history. Many of us actually started really being fully active in politics because of the need for a new people to actually be very fully active in Declis Rakyat and later on in Pakatan Harapan, in particular when it comes to Bersatu. I dabbled in politics in the past. A legacy of my father did result in me dabbling in politics in UMNO before.
You're not merely dabbling in politics. No, you're Bersatu, like Supreme Council member.
Like I said, this was only in recent history over the last 3 to 4 years. But in the past, I was clearly a professional at 18 years in Shell, a company which would not tolerate political influence within the company because it's a multinational. And of course, there's issues around having a real politician involved in the company. I was doing oil and gas advisory before that. Interestingly, I'm also not just a chairman of Mara Corporation, but for some of the institutions within the Pakatan Harapan government, the scrutiny of appointments is even closer, even greater. I'm in the board of LTAT, and I'm grateful to for appointment there. But the reason why I'm there is because my credentials actually fit. And I wasn't the only.
Can you just do the simple act of perhaps resigning from your Bersatu post and then making sure that you fulfill actually that mandate of cutting off political ties? Because as we know, the rural voter base is very valuable, and Amara is under the Ministry of Rural Development, and so if you did cut off the ties, you'd be seen as not doing the bidding of your political masters.
I would love to do so. In fact, to be honest, if I actually cut all my political ties, I would qualify to be an executive again. I would actually be able to go for a C-suite position even because of my credentials. And it would actually make sure that my family is more comfortable because I'd probably get triple what I'm earning now. But
in Mara,
anywhere that they choose to employ me. I'm an oil and gas professional. I mean, in December, Qatar Petroleum actually shotgunned a whole lot of us, actually trying to pull us into Qatar. So I was actually foregoing quite a lot of income by actually deciding to do this national service. In totality, with all the income that I'm getting through all these these board appointments and also the chairmanship of Mara Corporation, I am actually earning about a third at least of what I'm worth. And the reason why we make the sacrifice is because Pakatan Harapan actually is relatively small. And on top of that, the number
small
of people...
Small in terms of?
Numbers. And in terms of
in,
people
in
qualified...
In parliament, you mean?
No, no. Numbers in terms of sheer numbers of people as members of party and also in numbers of people that are actually qualified to sit in some of these positions. If you notice, there's a lot of people actually now appointed into positions where there have been a lot of forgiveness or redemption. A lot of people are complaining. Why is it we've got a few of the singing CEOs still sitting in CEO positions? Well, the answer to that is simply this. Well, who would you like to replace them with? We'd love to replace them with someone else, but please propose a few other names and we'll try it out.
Well,
and
it's usually done through the normal interview process, right?
And by and large, we've actually successfully done so. But in other cases, when discussions were made with some of these people, we realized actually some of them actually are worthy of redemption. And it's better that they stay rather than we actually eject them, find someone less capable coming in and actually leading towards screwing up the business, which actually is bad for the country and bad for the people.
How can you assure people that you're not listening to your political masters and you have that independence to do things well? On paper,
I've actually gone against our political masters a few times already. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, when it came to the Linas debate, I was actually very openly against the approach that was taken by the Ministry of and MESTEC. My view is that actually we're taking a rather extreme view considering the track record of Linas relative to, for instance, the situation we saw in Pulau Insungai Kimkim.
So let's recap Linas for a moment, right? You are for and the rest of Malaysia is against
Not the residents of Kuantan either. I mean, this is the funny thing about Linas. Whenever I look back at the situation with Linas and people saying that the people of Kuantan against it, or people of Indra Mahkota, which is actually the real parliamentary seat where it's actually sitting at, I'm actually puzzled because when I look at the crowds that come, we see buses trucking the crowds protesting against it coming from KL and Bentong. So now the question is, which community members really are protesting? Or are we talking
nobody in KL or Bentong or Kuantan, in fact, would want that in their backyard. This is primarily a NIMBY situation, not in my backyard.
You just said the community, right? So which member of community actually attended all these things?
Toxic waste issue been settled?
Well, the toxic waste issue, as far as we understand it, and this is actually, look, I'm actually a chemical engineer by training. So what I did to reassure myself that this is something worth defending was to visit the plant. I visited the plant twice. I'm not just a chemical engineer coming out of the Wright University. I actually worked with dirt under my nails, internationally in Shell, trained into our HSSE culture as well. I went through the plant, I went through their processes, I went through the documentation, I've gone through the research work that was done, the review team that was appointed by the previous government, as well as the current government, and I found myself finding myself satisfied that they've actually taken all measures necessary according to the law. Now, we've now added additional regulations to make it even safer. And Linus has actually responded quite well. They've now decided, to their cost, to build the facility that we find so objectionable, where they're replacing that with a new facility in Perth. It will take some time for them to build that, but they're doing it. And they're adhering to that requirement. And what we're finding also is that they're very open-minded. And in fact, when Mara Corporation spoke about doing something collaborative with them, they're actually talking to us first about what do we do with the waste? And they were the ones who said to us, don't touch the radioactive stuff because we already have a plan with the government and we have to adhere to that plan. We can't do anything corporate about that. We can't do anything in terms of diluting it. We need to get permission from the government first if we want to do that. So I've actually found it quite puzzling why we've got a lot of this big furore around it. And I think it's actually more fear than anything else. Fear generated maybe because of legacy of Bukit Merah, fear of people not fully understanding the science around it, and we need to actually shine a light on it. And if we shine a light on it, perhaps then we'll get to see the real benefits that we can get from it.
Akram Shah Sanusi, Chairman of Mara Corp, is on The Breakfast Grill this morning, and we'll be coming back with more discussion after this. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
On The Breakfast Grill this morning is Akram Shah Sanusi, Chairman of Mara Corporation. And Akram, earlier on, we ended off with Linus, where you say that people are fearful and they might not see the whole picture. I think the problem here is that the diseases take a long time to develop, right? Maybe as a result of exposure to the radioactive.
People are fearful.
How can you comfort them about this fear, which may take place perhaps after you leave Mara Shipchairman and go to some more...
Actually, it's all to do with communication, mm-hmm. and it's all to do with awareness.
What is the degree of risk of getting diseases from these toxic waste?
Okay, the concern I have about going too technical is that they always go too technical. And in the end, that being going down the route of being too technical really puts people off rather than let people understand fully. The biggest problem we have with the Lynas issue has always been about communication. And the last time Lynas tried to communicate with people before the whole issue erupted again many months ago was when it was actually being constructed. Since then, Lynas, being a good corporate citizen and, you know, because it's Australian, their practice has been, let's keep quiet and just engage with the community. So actually, that's why the community engagement has been very good. We've got
references. What are they telling the community about?
Well, they actually talk to the community about how they can actually get more of the community engaged in terms of any issues they may have. Like, for instance, whether the community is affected by their business in any way. Engagement in terms of how they can engage, both in terms of business, employment, engagement in terms of what quality of life changes they may have had. And it's interesting because the community actually sees Lynas as a friendly party, as opposed to some other parties nearby that are affecting their lifestyle. I mean, people go to Kuantan and suddenly realize sometimes in gaming that the whole place is painted red. Mm-hmm. That's nothing to do with Lynas. And certainly, if you ask the community, they will point fingers to other industries in the area.
I think people are also fearful about the wider policy implications of this kind of businesses being nationalized. I mean, if it's nationalized, certainly it goes beyond those communities.
Well, I don't quite understand when you say nationalized.
This kind of literally dirty businesses, right? It's not a NIMBY situation as well.
Again, this labeling is actually very, 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 very exactly the sort of thing that I say there's a problem with terms of communication. Now we have to go a bit technical. The waste that actually comes out of Lynas is recorded at 6 becquerels. Now, 6 becquerel is within the limits of some OECD countries. In Australia, 6 becquerel is fine. In Malaysia, because we have a higher standard, we follow the European standards, partly because of Bukit Merah, we have a limit of 1 becquerel. And that's the reason why we put all these regulations and restrictions to Lynas and why they need to address this very, very quickly. The agreement that was done with the previous government for Lynas was actually for them to do permanent storage. And they just adhered to that regulation. It wasn't their mistake that the government agreed to that. The previous government did that. So they adhered to that regulation. Now we have a new government that wants to do it stricter, and they're trying to adhere to that regulation as well to actually move it out. Now, 6 becquerel, interestingly, is more radioactive than you see in certain tourist attractions in Malaysia. Like, for instance, there's this, Pasir Hitam in Langkawi that people actually go and visit, right? Record says that actually that Pasir Hitam is emitting 7 becquerels. So are we saying that we shouldn't be going to Langkawi because you've got really radioactive emanations coming from natural formations on the earth? And now I'm going to get commented on by the Prime Minister because I'm now tainting the name of Langkawi. But this is just the truth. This is just the reality of the situation.
It's a good chance for you to go against your political master.
There you go. I actually interacted recently at the International Rare Earth Conference in Malaysia. I interacted with a guy who was actually with a company that actually transports radioactive materials like thorium for industry. And I asked them, oh, so you actually transport stuff for Lynas? And they said, no, we can't because it's not good business for us because we can't get the premiums since the feedstock for Lynas is not radioactive enough for them to be required. It actually can be transported by other transporters, which have less stricter safety requirements. So that's for the feedstock. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So I would say that we need better communication and we need a track record. Now, addressing your question directly, issues of radioactive effects, issues of poisoning related to radioactive, actually doesn't take years to develop because radioactive deaths actually happen in a matter of weeks, months, and not years. Lynas have actually operated for 7+ years now. I mean, it actually started up construction in 2008. It's actually a going concern for the past 11 years. why has not there not been a single case that shows that there are issues in terms of the radioactivity? Mm-hmm. Not even from the staff and certainly not from the community. So for us, we have to base it on track record. Now, if you want to then move back towards principle and everyone actually being angry about, you know, we're doing this dangerous business, then what I say is, if you want to actually hold on to your principle that strongly, then put your money where your mouth is. Stop using all your smartphones. Because every single smartphone has a neodymium magnets in it, and those magnets are coming from plants like Linus. Some of them are coming from China. Some of them are coming from Malaysia. And you should be stopping using your smartphones. You can stop using, you know, windscreen wipers on cars because they also have rare earth in their motors. You can stop dreaming about having wind turbines to generate electricity because they also use rare earth magnets as well. And the truth of the matter is this. Linus stands, interestingly, as the safest, rare earth plant in the world at the moment, because every other rare earth manufacturer in the world now is in Inner Mongolia. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it's in Inner Mongolia is because we understand that the safety standards there are really, really bad.
Akram, in the interest of time, let's move on to your other businesses. And education is one of them. You have a few assets under your wing, UniKL, UniMara, Sdn Bhd College Polytech. You even have Yayasan Pelajaran Mara. But we can see that there is a troubling situation in the sense that Bumi graduate unemployment is to the tune of 4.6%, and the national graduate unemployment is 10-point-something percent. So Bumi graduates form half of that unemployment.
Yes, this is a major concern for us. In fact, that lines up nicely also with what our intention is, which is to actually focus a lot in tech and moving towards the higher value, higher technology industries. I'm not returning back to Linus, but there you go. That's the reason why we have this MOU with Linus, because we feel that we can actually build very nice downstream, industry around it. First, with production of rare earth magnets, and from those magnets, motors and other elements and other environmental technologies, like for instance, water purification. We also have existing companies. As said, we are in aerospace under our MRO AAT. At the moment, it's just an MRO, but we actually say that. We only at the moment just have a tier one MRO. We want to actually do more. We want to attract manufacturing, concerns coming into Malaysia. Mara Corporation and Mara, our intention is actually to support that process. And you know, under shared prosperity, aerospace industry is one of the key areas we want to grow in. And we believe we can do more than just, you know, components of wings or poking holes in
components.
So if we
look back through the history of Mara, it's been a few decades now, and the government of the day in those areas would also have looked at their government-directed policies at growth industries, right? What are the specific strategies that you can take right now to ensure that this problem is kind of solved, because unemployment rate is so high? And what are you doing differently from the previous administrations?
Okay, this is where actually quite critical. I need to give you some background. Phase one was actually transferring 8 companies to Mara Corporation. There's another 10 companies now still staying with Mara. We hope phase two to complete by the end of the year, because end of the year, our stamp duty exemption goes away from MOF. Now, if the other 10 companies come across, then we continue with the transformation. The notion is this. All these GLCs under all the agencies and now under agency holdings, they in the past have the mentality of being social enterprises. So because they are seen as being social enterprises, some of them are actually loss-making and all making marginal profits. Now, that doesn't make sense. As a commercial entity, they need to actually make profits. Not because we want to make dividends, mind you. We need to have money to reinvest so that it can grow. With reinvestment, we actually can actually grow the investor base. Now, that gives us credibility in the market as well, because we're making profits and we're actually growing our investor base. With that profitability and ability to grow, we can actually then engage as partners for other investors, hopefully good, positive foreign investors to come into the country to actually develop downstream businesses here. So like I said, aerospace, we have an MRO, but we're credible now because now we're profitable to talk about let's bring in other entities to come into Malaysia. Now, some of them are human capital entities. Like, for instance, we've been talking to Keith Ridgway, founder of the Advanced Material Research Centre in Sheffield.
I have to stop you there. And actually, we'll continue this conversation after the news. We have Akram Shah Sanusim, chairman of Mara Corp, and this is going to be at an extended grill. And we'll continue after the news. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Welcome back. And on the Breakfast Grill this morning, we have Akram Shah Sanusi, chairman of Mara Corp. Akram, a total of about 3 billion ringgit is allocated to Mara every year, almost every year. In the latest budget 2020, 3.3 billion has been allocated. How does this work? How much of this money is being channeled to Mara Corporation itself?
Actually, our intention is for none of the money to come into Mara Corporation at all. For the course of this year, we've had to have injections of what we call duit pengurusan or management fees. That's because we're in the process of turning around the companies. So we had one dividend payout only due from one of the subsidiaries last year. And that actually hasn't come through yet. But once that payout has come through, that would probably be enough for us to actually pay salaries for about 4 to 6 months and actually continue operations ourselves for four to six months. With the profits that we are projecting for this year, we are hoping for significantly more dividends in the coming year.
How much profits are you projecting?
Well, the profits that we're projecting for this year is about 20 million before tax. And we already are making some commitments to Mara in terms of how we give back. Like for instance, of course, from 20 million profits before tax, we're going to have tax. So we've already committed that some of the tax that's coming from our profitable companies will go towards Yayasan Pendidikan Mara, which is basically the charity or social responsibility arm of Mara. And the intention is to set up a fund specifically to cover the cost of exam fees for B40 students sitting for IGCSE. This is still a gap in spending when it comes to Mara, because the IGCSE program has already been instituted for many years. It was very successful in the MRSMs, very popular. However, the recent policy in actually getting more B40s into MRSMs means that there are a lot more B40s that need to be catered for. And the cost for the exam fees for IGCSE is about 4,000 per student. That means that the B40 parents, for each student that they may have in an MRSM, which may be one, but on occasion two or three, would cost them something like 50 ringgit a month for 3.5 years. So we have committed with a letter that I've written to the minister that we will contribute to actually trying to cut that cost down with our tax exemptions for CSR. And so that's one way that we're saying that we're giving back to Mara. Our intention for next year is, assuming that we are status quo with regards to the companies that we have, we would like to have no more injections of management fees from Mara. We will maintain as we are with the funds we have available, plus with the dividends that we're actually earning. That will actually put us in sharp, we will actually be under pressure ourselves. But we want that. We want to have that financial discipline. We want to have the discipline of a company. However, if the 10 other companies actually do get sent across to us, we will have to review the status of those companies. Because we understand that phase two was planned later because Mara wanted to be kind to us. Now, the 8 that we actually received, we had to significantly turn around. The other 10 would probably require significantly more work. And we will need to reassess and discuss with Mara how far we would need any particular assistance, if any, if these remain the 10 transferred across.
So while 20 million contribution, 20 million profits is not a lot, it's actually a drop in the ocean to that 3 billion that
indeed,
the government
is
allocating. And some people are arguing that this kinds of allocation develops this crutch mentality, right? And in spite of the best intentions of the Bumiputra policy, and in fact, the policy of Bersatu itself, what are your thoughts on this?
I actually tend to agree, but we need to make this more sustainable, and we need to actually make this more disciplined. Handouts will not continue in the long term. Of course, that all depends on political support.
Are you speaking on behalf of Mara Corp or Mara itself?
I'm not talking as a politician, and I'm talking as a Pakatan Harapan politician.
Right.
I'm saying that handouts will not be there forever. Because as a Malay politician, I have this thing called marwah, dignity. And you know, we are Muslims. And Rasulullah, our prophet, actually taught us, and he himself practiced this, he would never receive a donation. In fact, his direct family line still cannot receive donation. They cannot they do not qualify for zakat. So as Muslims and as Malays, we shouldn't be happy and proud of receiving handouts. And so we should actually look at this in terms of sustainability. Now, We are already practicing this at the moment. Like, for instance, we don't really have that many Mara scholarships anymore. What we do have now is a lot of Mara loans. They are convertible loans, convertible to scholarships if you perform. So there is a performance catch to it now, as opposed to, you know, really scholarships in full for no conditions in the past. This is a transformation of the culture around Mara for many years, and it's actually being applied. Now, in terms of assistance to companies also, a large significant portion of assistance now come in terms of matching grants, not, you know, full grants. So you got to prove, you got to put money on the table to say, yes, this is how we're actually achieving it, and this is what we need for additional capital. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, this is proof to say that we already have a going concern, a business that justifies why you provide us this matching grant.
So continuing with your wearing of the political hat, it can also be argued that equality is something that is promoted by Islam. And we see a lot of hardcore poor in not only the Bumiputra community, but other communities as well, other ethnicities. In fact, the Indian community has been sidelined for a long time. And in fact, as far as the Bumiputra community is concerned, studies have shown that all the assistance have just gone to the top 1% and not really the actual Bumiputra people who need it.
Okay, there are several questions that to be answered, so I don't know whether we'll be
mainly
able to answer
them. On the part of what policy okay, is needed tackle poverty and also about equality.
Let's bring this into focus in terms of where Mara has been successful. Mara has been very successful in human capital in particular, right? So in terms of uplifting human capital, it's undeniable. And from there, actually, I see fruits of it from among my friends. I went to an MRSM. During my time, I shouldn't have qualified if you looked at in terms of means. However, Mara has a system whereby you qualify also based on merit. And if even your means are significant, then by merit, you had to actually receive a certain score, then only can you enter MRSM. The reason why is because there was a belief that you needed some balance in terms of the suitable population. If all of them come from a B40 background, there wouldn't be enough of the M40s or even U40s to help uplift the culture within a culture of achievement within the student body. So some of us do manage to slip through because of merit. Now, one of my best friends actually now is a second son of a tobacco farmer, clearly hardcore poor. I've been to his house when we were young, and they only had a 2-room house. The man now is a senior bank manager in Maybank, and he only managed to get through this through the success of the policies that were driven by Mara. Now, this is the other thing that's to be pointed out. Interestingly, you mentioned about the Indian population. Now, since the 90s, maybe even before that, because I have some Chinese friends that I know, actually went through MRSM. About 10% of the MRSM population actually is meant to be non-Bumiputra. This started a long time ago. But we never achieved the target. And guess why? It's because the other races don't apply. The Bumiputra is always applied.
Well, I'm just referring to actual studies that have been done, right? Khalid Ibrahim and Liang's study that most of the distribution policies actually went to the top 1% of the Bumiputra, so-called Bumiputra community, right? So I guess a more direct question would be, in terms of policy, would a more direct needs-based rather than a race-based policy be more effective?
No, I would say that you need a mix of both. If you look at Kemakmuran Bersama, the Kemakmuran Bersama looks at race as well as need. And honestly speaking, a lot of that, what was quoted, actually, it doesn't talk about a sponsorship for education in particular, which is really the area which is Mara's forte. In that regard, actually, it's been very successful. A lot of the problem is the contracts. A lot of problem is actually to do with how you channel business. And there we know there's been a lot of dipping. There's a lot of beaks and troughs. So this is actually a key element that the Pakatan Harapan government makes to change. We need to make sure that we actually not just target needs, but we also actually target attitudes. We actually give support to the people that actually deserve it. And when we say deserve, we don't just mean in terms of needs, but those who have proven themselves to be worthy of actually being supported.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. And that was Akram Shah Sanusi, Chairman of Mara Corporation. I'm Julian Ng for The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.